the largest, actually, Arab majority population in the United States. So as soon as the results start to come out, so far, less than 10% of the votes have been counted in Michigan. They are going to Kamala Harris's favor. However, we do have a lot of other states that are going mainly to Trump. Yes, so far on this road to 270 electoral votes, right now it's not really looking good for Kamala Harris. She is almost less than 100. Meanwhile, Trump has surpassed that 100. However, right now the states that have been counted and are being counted have been majorly red states. So the majorly Republican-leaning states, we haven't counted and we haven't seen yet the polls that are due to close soon, in the next hour or 2 hour. They're supposed to be closing Midwest to the West. We're talking Utah, California, Nevada. Nevada is also a battleground state that's due to close soon. So we're due to see how these votes are going to turn out. And let's not forget as well that many of these states have certain concerns on their ballots. You have states that, you know, are concerned about abortion, for example, and then you have states that are concerned about immigration. So really, as those votes are coming out, as the polls are coming out and the results, we're due to see those voters. We're going to be in the mindset of these voters. We're going to see why they voted for Kamala Harris or why they voted for Donald Trump regarding on these issues. I mean, democracy today was the top concern in the early exit polls. And then after democracy, it was the economy, as we know, post-COVID-19. And then afterwards, it was abortion and then immigration. And we've seen how Trump has tackled the matter of immigration in the past week. I mean, the past week, both candidates have spent their times rallying in battleground states because they know that these swinging states will determine how they get to the White House and if they get to the White House. Now, surely they do have to go through the electoral votes. So right now, when, you know, a few minutes ago, as I said, the three battleground states, Wisconsin, Michigan, and Arizona have closed. So we're due to see right now is where it gets tenser and tenser.
Okay, and the latest numbers trickling in right now, Rachel, we have 120 electoral votes for Trump, 99, you mentioned under 100, for Harris. So that's 21 electoral college votes. You need 270 to win. For don't understand what kind of discrepancy that is, 120 to 99. I mean, it seems like a lot, but when you consider a lot of these Western states that do vote blue and carry heavy electoral payloads, like California, this could really be not really much. This 21 electoral college vote lead that Donald Trump currently has. He has a little over 24 million popular votes at 24,200,000, Rachel, and Kamala has at 21 million. So 24 to 21 million, it's really, for the most part, a tight race. I mean, Trump got off to a big start because a lot of red states got counted, like you mentioned, but it's really closer than the tale tells, isn't it?
Yes, yes, exactly. At first, it seemed that Donald Trump was gaining traction, was gaining ground way more than Kamala Harris. I mean, we started off with Kamala Harris only having 3, while Trump was almost in the 20s. And so right now, with those states, I mean, New York also closed in about a few minutes ago. Donald Trump was here last week rallying. New York has been a kind of a solid blue state, so we should be seeing who the projected winner is regarding that. Yes, as you said, the states that have closed first were mainly red states, including Tennessee as well. I mean, there are many states that have already closed, and it shows, according to local media, it shows, for example, that, you know, the votes haven't been counted yet, or like 1 or 3% have been voted in and counted. But because they are mainly red states, we are due to see that the projected winner is Donald Trump. But like you mentioned, right now, 99, 121, that really won't make that much of a difference as of now. But we have those battleground states, the three of them right now, Michigan, Wisconsin, Arizona, that are about to be counted. They could change and really make a huge jump in those electoral college votes.
All right, good stuff. Rachel, thank you for following these developments very closely with us here. We're going to check back with you shortly, so do stick around. Talk to you soon. Rachel Hamm doing there, joining us out of New York. And we should mention New York has holds a huge amount of electoral votes, 28 to be exact. Only 16% have been reported for the state. To Rachel's point, it's way too early to tally up even a lot of these states that seem like they're not swing states, and they are clearly blue or red. But New York, with 28 electoral votes, Kamala Harris is at 71% right now, with a million votes counted in her favor. In her favor, Donald Trump is at 28.3% in New York, which is 395,000 in his favor. But these are 28 electoral votes, and they were significant. Okay, Trump just got he's at 137 electoral votes for our viewers, and Kamala Harris is still at 99. But counting is still, results are still trickling in. We'll be following developments very closely here on Press TV and keep you updated and abreast of the latest accordingly. Take care, Rachel. Talk to you soon. Rachel Hamdoun joining us from New York. Meanwhile, the Hezbollah resistance movement presses ahead with its retaliatory operations against Israel, targeting regimes, military bases, and settlements deep inside occupied territories. And one of the latest operations, a group targeted the Male Golani Barracks headquarters of Israel's 810th Hermon Brigade with a barrage of missiles. Hezbollah also hit explosives factory in Hadera, south of Haifa, with missiles, while targeted gatherings of Israeli soldiers in the Ramta site and occupied Kfar Shuba Hills as well. And gatherings of Israeli soldiers in several settlements, including Dalton, Yifta, Kiryat Shemona, and Margaliot, were hit with Hezbollah rockets. And Hezbollah drones also targeted a gathering of Israeli forces on the outskirts of the town of Marun al-Ras and Israeli Army's artillery encampments and settlement of Neoth Mordecai. Israeli military pressed ahead with war of aggression against Lebanon, leaving more civilians dead and injured. In a late evening strike, Israeli warplanes bombed a residential building in the town of Baraj, killing at least 20 people and injuring over a dozen others. An earlier strike on the coastal town of Jia left one person dead and 20 injured. More than 6 weeks of intensified Israeli attacks on Lebanon, they prompted the International Federation of the Red Cross and the Red Crescent Societies to call for over $116 billion in help for the country. The IFRC has also demanded all parties protect paramedics in the conflict. Since October 2023, Israel's aggression against Lebanon has claimed over 3,000 people's lives and displaced over 1.2 million others, and it's injured over 13,500 Lebanese. Meanwhile, thousands of protesters have taken to the streets of Tel Aviv and other cities throughout occupied territories after Israel's opposition members called for a general strike. This after regime's prime minister sacked the minister of military affairs, Yoav Gallant, in a surprise announcement Tuesday evening. Protesters blocked the main highway in Tel Aviv and lit large bonfires, chanting slogans against Benjamin Netanyahu. Opposition leader Yair Lapid called Premier's decision an act of madness. He said Netanyahu is selling out regime security for his despicable political survival. The Israeli Premier cited a breakdown in trust after months of growing discord between him and Gallant as a reason behind his decision. Gallant has been a vocal critic of Netanyahu's handling of the war in Gaza and his post-war plans for Gaza. Israel Katz, the former minister and longtime Netanyahu loyalist, has now replaced Gallant. Israeli forces press ahead with indiscriminate air and artillery strikes across the Gaza Strip, causing more death and destruction. Regime's latest attacks mainly focus in northern Gaza, where tight Israeli siege has been now in place for 32 consecutive days. At least 9 civilians, including several women and children, were killed when an airstrike hit a residential building in the Al-Tufa neighborhood east of Gaza City. An earlier air raid also killed 5 Palestinians in the northern part of that same city. Israeli strikes on Jabalia and Nusayrat refugee camps have killed nearly half a dozen civilians. And to the south, airstrikes caused several casualties in Al-Fakhar neighborhood of Khan Yunis. Israel's genocidal campaign started back in October last year, and it's resulted in over 43,400 Palestinians killed and over 102,000 others injured. Earlier, we checked in with our Gaza correspondent, Moti Abu Musaba, from the central city of Deir al-Balah, with your update.
Hey, the Israeli killing machine continued to harvest more lives of the Palestinian people in all areas of Gaza Strip and inflict more destruction and devastation in the besieged enclave. As you know, since dawn hours so far, we have more than 61 Palestinian civilians, mostly women and children, have been killed. While this number is still rising incrementally as a result of those ongoing attacks, particularly against the northern part of Gaza Strip, whereas 46 Palestinian civilians were reportedly killed there. And as you know, the northern part of Gaza Strip is still the centric and the focal point of the Israeli genocidal attacks targeting the Palestinian people in that area. The current situation is still beyond catastrophic, whereas the Israeli artillery shelling is still maintained heavily and brutally against various parts of the northern part of Gaza Strip, particularly Jabal refugee camp. In addition to that, as you know, the major development that took place today was about the displacement orders which were issued by the Israeli occupation forces demanding the Palestinian people in Beit Lahia city to evacuate the entire city. However, when many Palestinian people began to move and flee those areas, they were targeted heavily by the Israeli occupation forces, leaving multiple Palestinian casualties. So this reveals clearly that those evacuation and the displacement orders actually have nothing to do with the Palestinian safety. As you know, those evacuation and displacement orders are meant to exert more pressure on the Palestinian people.
Palestinian Ministry of Education says Israeli forces have killed thousands of students across occupied territories since the beginning of the regime's genocidal campaign in Gaza. Ministry said regimes killed nearly 12,000 students in Gaza since last October, leaving over 18,500 others injured. Israeli forces have also killed 115 students in the occupied West Bank. Ministry added Israel's genocide has also taken a toll on educational centers. It added more than 200 educational buildings, including scores of UN-run schools, have either been severely damaged or completely destroyed. Hundreds of thousands of students have also been deprived of attending classes at schools or universities since the regime started its onslaught on Gaza. The UN Relief and Works Agency for Palestinian Refugees, UNRWA, is facing significant challenges in Gaza when it comes to Israel escalates its military operations in the besieged strip and surrounding areas following Knesset's decision to ban UNRWA's operations in occupied territories.
UNRWA was founded with the primary aim of addressing the needs of hundreds of thousands of Palestinians who were forcibly expelled from their homes and villages. Established in 1949 in the aftermath of the Nakba, UNRWA has been pivotal in providing essential services to millions of Palestinian refugees. For over seven decades, it has worked tirelessly to deliver education, health care, and social services to refugees in the Gaza Strip, the occupied West Bank, and the neighboring countries such as Lebanon and Jordan. Reports indicate that UN staff and warehouses are being directly targeted, leading to damage to two-thirds of the agency's facilities. With a significant increase in displacement and infrastructure destruction, civilians are increasingly reliant on the agency's limited services. The Israeli regime has recently enacted new laws that make it impossible for UNRWA to operate. This development follows funding cuts to the agency from several countries, including the United States. Critics argue that these actions undermine the humanitarian principles and worsen the suffering of already vulnerable Palestinian population, leading to catastrophic consequences for health, education, and social support in a region already grappling with significant hardships.
In these critical times and as the dire situation evolves, the fate of UNRWA and its vital services are hanging in the balance, raising urgent questions about the future of the Palestinian refugees and the broader implications for the regional stability. Ghada Ibrahim, Deir al-Balah.
And that's it for your latest, everyone. Thank you for joining us here on World News.
Muscle of life. The sound of living. the sound will endure.
Hello.
IRIB English Radio.
Limelight. With the world's focus on Gaza, Zionist settlers, often abetted by the Zionist regime army, are violently dispossessing Palestinians of their ancestral lands. Regarding this issue, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Please stay tuned for more. Middle East Eye wrote, Hossein Kasib lives in constant fear, knowing he and his family could be next. Over the past year, while much of the world's attention has been focused on the war on Gaza, several residents of Umm Safa, a picturesque village just 12 kilometers north of Ramallah, have been driven from their homes by armed settlers, often aided by the Zionist regime army. Settler violence is not a new phenomenon in the occupied West Bank, where large swathes of territory are under Israeli civil and military control. But since the genocide in Gaza erupted, land seizures and violent attacks aimed at forcing Palestinians to abandon their homes have spiked. The attacks have coincided with sweeping movement restrictions that have seen Palestinians denied access to cities, towns and villages. In recent months, the Zionist settlers, emboldened by the election of far-right figures from the settlement movement, began leveling the Al-Shami and Ras mountains near Umm Safa with the aim of turning the area into a settlement outpost. The residents told Middle East Eye that when they approached the Israeli regime authorities for help, they were rebuffed and told to return with documents proving their legal ownership of the lands. After an extensive search, they presented documents dating back hundreds of years to the Ottoman era showing that they were, in fact, the legal owners. Hossein said, "We went to the Israeli civil administration hoping it would prevent the settlers from seizing our lands. In the end, the Israeli officials told us that the lands were state property and we couldn't use them." In 1995, the Oslo Agreement divided the West Bank into three zones known as Area A, B, and C. Area C, which comprises around 60% of the West Bank, was meant to be gradually transferred to Palestinian jurisdiction. But after a failed peace process in which the Zionist regime refused to end its occupation and withdraw militarily, the area remains under full Israeli military and civil control. Hossein told Middle East Eye that the lands currently being leveled were just 15 minutes away from his home. Since the Zionist settlers started their construction works, he and his brothers received notices ordering them to demolish their homes. Hossein said, "Every day we live in hell. We don't sleep at night because they aren't content with just bulldozing the land but attacking our homes. They want us to leave so they can take over the entire mountain." According to the village council in Umm Safa, Zionist settlers have sought to connect the settlement of Halamish and Atarit, which were established after hundreds of Palestinians were evicted from their ancestral lands. Around 600 dunams, about 60 hectares of village land, were also confiscated in the 1990s to build the main road leading to the settlements. At present, there are only 720 Palestinians left in Umm Safa, many of whom lack the land to build new homes. Meanwhile, the Zionist regime has closed the village's eastern and western entrances, severely restricting civilian and commercial movement. According to residents, human rights groups and experts, the situation in Umm Safa is not new and is part of a broader push by settlers and the Israeli regime government to take advantage of the war in Gaza to increase pressure on Palestinian communities to flee. Earlier this year, Israeli regime authorities approved the seizure of 12.7 square kilometers of land in the Jordan Valley, indicating it was the largest single appropriation approved since 1993 Oslo Accords. Many of the 700,000 Israelis who illegally live in occupied East Al-Quds and the West Bank are motivated by what they see as a religious mission to restore the historical land to the Jewish people. According to Peace Now, an Israeli group advocating for a two-state solution and the end of the Zionist regime's occupation of Palestinian lands, the Israeli government has allocated millions of dollars to protect a small unlicensed Jewish farms in the West Bank and secure a small settlement outpost with the aim of developing them until they become full-fledged settlements. Documents revealed in July showed that the pro-settler Israeli regime government secretly funneled money into unauthorized outposts, which are separate from the more than 100 officially recognized settlements. Some of those outposts have been linked to settler violence against Palestinians and are sanctioned by the U.S. Last year, the Ministry of Settlements and National Missions, headed by Orit Strok, a far-right politician affiliated with the Jewish Home Party, announced that 75 million shekels, $19.7 million, had been allocated in the budget to provide security equipment for emerging settlements, a term used to refer to the unauthorized Jewish farms and settlement outposts in the West Bank. The money that has been poured into settlement expansion has coincided with a sharp increase in violence by Zionist settlers against Palestinian men, women and children. According to data from the Wall and Settlement Resistance Commission, during the first half of this year, settlers have carried out at least 1,334 attacks on Palestinians across the West Bank and killed at least seven Palestinians. During the same period, Zionist settlers established at least 28 settlement outposts, including pastoral and agricultural ones, while the Israeli regime government conducted studies of 83 structural plans that included 13,730 settlement units, 8,511 of which were in the West Bank and 6,723 in Al-Quds. The Jordan Valley in the east of the West Bank has emerged as one of the areas most susceptible to settlement expansion and settler violence, with human rights organizations recording almost daily attacks against Palestinians. Hassan Malihat, the general supervisor of Al-Baydar Organization for Defense of Bedouin Rights, told Middle East Eye that Israel had emboldened settlers seeking to control the Jordan Valley by allowing them to establish pastoral settlements. He said Bedouins were routinely targeted by settler gangs who would steal livestock, attack Palestinian children and launch attacks on homes and schools, including arson attacks. He told MEE, The terrorism carried out by settler militias is why many Bedouin communities forcibly left. Malihat said the local population suffers from the absence of any legal protection, as the Israeli army supports the settlers in these attacks that are not individual or random. He said, the responsibility is now on the international community to intervene and protect the rights of people so they can remain on their lands. For others, the emergence of pastoral settlements has emerged as a new tactic aimed at expelling Palestinians.
IRIB English Radio presents Viewpoints.
Viewpoints.
With the presence of different scholars.
With the presence of different scholars. IRIB English Radio.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. Welcome to another episode of the program Viewpoints. I am Atal, the host of this program. With me in the studio are two guest speakers, Sheikh Rouhani and
Brother Muhammad.
Assalamu alaikum, Brother Muhammad. Welcome
to the show. Wa alaikum assalam.
So for today's episode, we want to talk about Al-Aqsa Flood or Operation. Can we call the Zionism the modern fascists, Brother Rouhani? Since you are interested in history, sorry.
You know, what I wanted to say in this regard, that all this, what you can say, martyrdom of these great people who happened, yeah?
Yes.
I want to say that if we look at it from a kind of comprehensive perspective, we see that whenever or wherever you are on the right path, on the right position, wherever you defend justice.
As leader said, on the right side of the history.
Yeah, on the right side of the history.
Right.
You would face lots of troubles, problems, and challenges. It's not something new again.
All right.
Let's see the story of Prophet Noah.
Mm-hmm.
You see that we all Muslims, Jews, and Christians believe in him. He struggled for a thousand years.
All right.
You see?
Okay.
But still he was alone.
Yes.
You see, no one supported him.
Even his son left him. Man.
Yeah. And then if you go to the history of Prophet Ibrahim, alayhi salam.
Yeah.
Look at Prophet Ibrahim.
All right.
Prophet Ibrahim was burned by the Nimrud.
Right. Yeah.
So this is the story of Ibrahim. Ibrahim is the prophet whom we and also Christians and Jews all believe in him.
All right.
That was a big hero,
a great
personality in the history of,
yeah,
of religions. If you go look at the history of Prophet Moses, what happened to him?
Mm-hmm.
What did Pharaoh did with this great prophet?
Yes.
You see? And look at Prophet Jesus. These are the facts that whenever you are on the right path,
right,
or on the right position or on the right side, right, of the history, you would face Pharaoh, you would face Nimrud.
Even Prophet Muhammad himself.
Even Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam, yes.
I was the prophet who had experienced the harshest moments of history.
Yes.
Even worse than my previous prophet. These are the words of Prophet Muhammad himself, okay?
Yeah. Yeah.
That was really difficult.
It seems that it is based on a kind of divine wisdom.
Uh-huh.
It is based on a kind of divine wisdom. There is a hikmah, a secret.
All right.
That we might not be able to truly understand. Mm-hmm. When we look at the history, we see that Prophet Ibrahim, Prophet Noah, Prophet Musa, Prophet Isa, even Prophet Yaqub,
Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam,
Imam Abdullah al-Hussein, yeah, Amir al-Mu'mineen, okay, even the last savior, we believe that he will be also martyred.
You okay, know? Yes.
Yeah.
All right.
So this is the story of this world.
Yeah, okay.
I want to say that this resistance started from the very beginning of the history,
mm-hmm,
and it will continue till the end of the history.
Yeah.
There are always these khair and shar.
Right.
They're always,
uh-huh,
evil and good. They cannot come together.
Mm-hmm.
Or iman or faith and disbelieving, or let's say faithlessness.
All right.
These are the things that are always there. Those people who defend the justice, the truth, they are always ready to be sacrificed. It is the history.
All right. But does that mean that we are pro-sacrifice, brother? And pro-killing?
No, of course not pro-killing, but pro-sacrifice for what? Okay. You know, sacrifice for what? It depends.
I mean, this type of defense is very much different from the ISIS type of defense.
Exactly, yes.
That they have made, you know, committing suicide bombing or something like that. This is defensive for a holy cause and the holy faith. That's all right. Okay, so do you think that Muqawama is more popular now? In comparison to, for example, 1-2 years ago, because all the social media you could see, for example, hashtag hero, hashtag Sinwar. Muqawama in here and there, the rallies, demonstrations, universities, over here, there, in the European countries, in the heart of Europe.
Yeah.
You cannot believe that all these demonstrations are over there.
You see, in the intellectual and the academic community, and the political analysis, the political analysts in the world, around the world, they very well knew about the resistance. It was not unpopular among them.
Right.
But now, after the Al-Aqsa flood operations onwards...
Yes, to find Al-Aqsa, that's right.
Over 1 year has now... 1 year has now elapsed from that time. The resistance is now becoming more popular and popular, not because of the sacrifices and so on, but because of what the enemy is doing, rather.
Mm-hmm.
You see, if... the Zionist occupiers, if they would have taken a different path and maybe even, you know, tried to take steps in having a fair war, even though they're on the wrong side, having a fair war, that would have been a different course of history.
Yes.
But they have done every crime. They've committed every crime a human can imagine in Gaza.
Just look at what against humanity. Rafah, you know, just look at Hell's Kerr, tents, you know, firing them, bombarding. Yeah,
just CNN reporters. They went to the Israeli soldiers, the reservists who were there in Gaza, operating bulldozers, and now they were not able to return. They asked them why. One of them committed suicide. The other one who was operating the bulldozer as well, they said that we saw scenes that we can't really unsee anymore. They were bulldozing over live and dead bodies. They saw brains gushing out of the skulls. So these sceneries, of course, it will stay with them until the end.
Yeah.
We are living in the 21st century. We are living at a time where social media is ever so prevalent.
Yeah.
Every small incident that happens inside homes privately is now public. What about the incidents that happen in the broad daylight in front of the people, in front of the public, with satellites, with geosatellites, with so many security cameras, with mobile phones in their people's hand? All of this has been captured and now relayed to the world to
and
say,
just
look,
see
Palestine.
How funny it is when the history repeats itself, you know. There was a girl barefooted, you know, carrying her sister on the back.
In
and
Japan.
They compared it to the picture on the Hiroshima atomic bomb of America.
At that time, the media journalism was extremely controlled.
Yeah.
But now it's blasted. It's exploded. You can see now in Gaza pictures of what's going on there that you could have never seen before.
No.
Now, beyond that, now Israelis have not only committed genocide, but they have committed things that go beyond the mentality of mankind.
Mm-hmm.
Genocide has a specific limit, has a specific goal, but they're very indiscriminative in what they're doing.
Right.
And so therefore the organizations that were accused of being terrorists, of being terrorism, Hezbollah and Hamas, are today now being rendered as heroes because now they can rationalize that this is the reason why they are now resisting.
Mm-hmm.
This is the reason why they fought all these years. This is the reason why they had arms all these years. And so it is now rational to say that Hamas has the right, all the right to have arms, and they shouldn't be rendered as a terrorist group, rather a resistance group.
No.
So it's the actions of the enemy itself that really brought the resistance up into the top levels in the minds of the people and, you know, kind of cleanse them from the things that they had previously heard in the media.
All right.
وَاهْدِنِي وَلَا تَتْرُكْنِي
Sheikh Rouhani, what about the Islamic Republic of Iran's role in defending Hamas and Hezbollah? Are they doing the right thing? I mean, some people might say that, okay, by defending such groups in the region, more killing and more massacre is going to take place. Of course, I do not agree, but the question is that is this type of defense is going to put more fuel into the fire in the region or not? Since Iran is a strong country in the region, I mean, in comparison to Palestine or what's taking place in Gaza, you know?
Globally talking or internationally talking, there is an international law saying that you have the right of self-defense.
Right.
Whenever you are attacked, you have the right to defend yourself.
Mm-hmm.
So this legal rule is applicable for all the countries,
right,
not only, for example, Palestine. Now let's get back to Palestine. What happened to this area, for example, some 60, 70 years back? So there were people living, and then some other people were brought in this area.
Right.
So the problem started from here,
mm-hmm,
you know? The main problem is that when you have people who come to your land, to your territory, to your country,
yes.
Now what's your decision?
So I mean a region without Zionism will be more peaceful.
There were some Jews, they're living with the Palestinians.
What people.
No one can, But the problem is that when you try to, for example, get the territories of the people, so the people do not have any other alternative except to resist against you.
All right.
So because this is exactly oppression. So whenever there is oppression, you have the right, you are in the right position if you defend these people, if you protect these people against oppression.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why whoever support oppressed people legally, morally, ethically, whatever you can term it, it is a true thing. It is the truth to defend
the oppressed people. This has been one of the slogans of the Islamic Revolution
of
Iran at the time of the late Imam Khomeini. And just look at what the late Imam Khomeini predicted about Israel more than 40-50 years ago. Okay, really, no forecaster around the world can predict such thing. You know, bro, just one by one, they're true. That's all right.
It's like live
such
TV.
A binish that he had insight and the basira that the late Imam had. Also, the rahbar, Islamic Republic of Iran, Ayatollah Khomeini. May Allah protect him. That's right. As the rahbar said, you know, we are really observing the akhlaq of the war.
Yeah.
You know, the code of ethics at war, you know, you could see that in the attacks that were made by Iran, you know, the Fatah supersonics and, you know, all the things reached even around Tel Aviv. So, but the case is that we are not like you. We are not attacking civilians. You know, this is a war. But unfortunately, they are not observing such.
Yeah,
you know, rituals and the rights of.
It's not a just war. It's not a. It's not a balanced war. Mm-hmm. It's a war that is based on completely one-sided legal stance, and the other is completely.
Okay.
You know, they can do anything,
mm-hmm,
and they have that immunity in the United Nations Security Council. Okay. Anytime anything goes against them, is easily vetoed by more than one country. To be honest.
Right. Thank you very much, Brother Muhammad and Sheikh Rouhani, for your presence in the program. Viewpoints. Inshallah, one day Palestine will be free, and inshallah, Hezbollah and the resistance groups, you know, become more and more successful in their operations. And may Allah bless the soul of Sayyidina Surla, you know, Shahid Sinwar, Shahid Safiuddin Hashimi, and Brother Ismail Haniya. Thank you very much for presence, and thank you very much, dear listeners, for being with us in the program Viewpoints. For more information, visit our website at iranradio.ir. To another episode, God bless you all. Fi amanallah. Free Palestine.
Other, that this day will be the last. tomorrow. We all can go home free, and all this will finally end. Palestine, tomorrow will be free. Palestine, tomorrow will be free.
The Limelight. Observers have repeatedly said that the Zionist regime's crimes against the people of Gaza and Lebanon could not have happened without the staunch support of the Joe Biden administration. The Biden administration has poured a record of at least $17.9 billion on military aid into Israel's war machine over the past year. We take a look at some of the world press and media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. The Common Dreams website has covered this story and tells us more. In a letter addressed to U.S. President Joe Biden, a group of House Democrats have questioned the American military's involvement in the escalation of violence by the Israeli regime in West Asia. The letter sent on Friday, 1st of November, to Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin and the Secretary of State Antony Blinken demanded an immediate end to the United States' involvement in Israel's potentially endless regional war. The letter contends that a deepening American involvement in the regime's barbaric atrocities in the Gaza Strip and Lebanon is unconstitutional, as it was not authorized by Congress. The lawmakers asked the Biden administration to provide a detailed account of U.S. troops' involvement to command, coordinate, participate in the movement of, or accompany Israeli forces and their atrocities in Gaza, Lebanon, Yemen, Syria, or elsewhere in the region. The letter said, American military involvement in these wars has not been authorized by the United States Congress as required by the Constitution and U.S. law. The letter signed by Representatives Rashida Tlaib and Cori Bush said, in the absence of an immediate ceasefire and end of hostilities, Congress retains the right and ability to exercise its constitutional authority to direct the removal of any unauthorized armed forces from the region under Section 5C of the War Powers Resolution. The lawmakers also admitted that the Biden administration has deepened U.S. involvement in Israel's devastating regional war through comprehensive intelligence sharing and operational coordination, and now even the direct deployment of U.S. troops to the occupied Palestinian territories. They said not only do these actions encourage further escalation and violence, but they are also unauthorized by Congress. They added the American people have made it clear that they want to see an immediate ceasefire, an end to these wars, and a return of captives, not deepening American involvement in potentially endless regional war. The move is part of an ongoing congressional debate over presidential war powers, sparked by the start of Israel's genocidal war in Gaza on 7th of October 2023. According to health officials in Gaza, the Israeli war has massacred nearly 43,500 Palestinians. In Lebanon, Israeli forces have killed about 3,000 Lebanese people. Observers have repeatedly said that Israel's crimes against the people of Gaza and Lebanon could not have happened without the staunch support of the Biden administration. The English website of the Al Mayadeen television network has also covered the same story. Five House Democrats warned U.S. President Joe Biden that the deployment of American troops to aid Israel's escalating aggression in West Asia violates U.S. laws, reprimanding the Biden administration amid accusations that it was intentionally dismissing domestic law to support Israeli violence in the region. In the letter, the Democrats, led by Representatives Rashida Tlaib and Cori Bush, slammed the administration's unilateral decision to share intelligence with the Israeli military and send troops to the occupied Palestinian territories and the West Asia region, saying it constitutes direct engagement in the region's conflicts. Consequently, the Constitution and War Powers Resolution of 1973, which lists Congress as the sole power that could declare war and approve the deployment of soldiers, are thereby violated. The letter stresses the U.S. Congress did not authorize the deployment of troops to the region, adding that the executive branch of the government cannot introduce U.S. armed forces into conflicts in the absence of an imminent or actual attack on its sovereignty. The Israeli expansion of the war throughout West Asia, particularly in Palestine, Yemen, Lebanon, Iraq, and Iran, was supported by the deployment of thousands of U.S. soldiers in the region. The most recent batch was dispatched to Israel to assist with the installation of a $1 billion high-altitude anti-missile system. Additionally, U.S. troops have supported Israeli forces in identifying alleged targets in the Gaza Strip. The lawmakers further stated that the current and any future deployment of U.S. armed forces in support of Israel's expanding regional wars qualifies as hostilities under the War Powers Resolution and is not in response to an imminent threat to the United States. Therefore, these actions lack authorization and fall under Congress's constitutional authority. They urged the Biden administration to clarify the extent of U.S. military involvement in Israel's actions and to justify recent strikes against the armed forces in Yemen, additionally highlighting that Congress has the power to withdraw unauthorized troops and halt their participation in the region. The letter said, "These destructive wars must end, as must any unauthorized U.S. involvement in these wars. The American public deserves a say on the issue of war, thus Congress's involvement and debate are necessary." The American newspaper, The Wall Street Journal, has covered the same story from a different angle. The United States is running low on interceptor missiles as demand for the weapons is surging due to the Israeli regime's endless war in the besieged Gaza Strip and Lebanon. The Wall Street Journal reported, on Tuesday, 29th of October, the U.S. is now facing a shortage of certain air defense missiles, raising concerns about the Pentagon's ability to manage Israel's ongoing war in Gaza and Lebanon in West Asia, the Russia-Ukraine war in Europe, as well as potential conflict in the Pacific region. It added, interceptors are rapidly becoming the most in-demand weaponry amid the escalating crisis, as Israel and other U.S. allies confront growing missile and drone threats from the resistance movements in the region. The Wall Street Journal further said, "The shortfall could become even more urgent after Israel's recent strikes on Iran, which U.S. officials fear might spark another wave of attacks by Tehran." The U.S.-backed Israeli regime attacked several Iranian military facilities early on 26th of October, martyring four servicemen of the armed forces and one civilian. 2 days later, Iran's defense minister, Brigadier General Aziz Nasirzadeh, said Israel's aggression had caused minor damage, which was immediately repaired and replaced. Iran has emphasized that it is not looking for war, but will not abandon its right to give an appropriate and firm response to Israel's latest act of aggression. According to the report, Pentagon officials and analysts are concerned about U.S. readiness, citing the inability to manufacture new missiles at a pace that matches their consumption. The figures by the report suggested that since October of last year, more than 100 standard missiles have been launched in an attempt to intercept incoming missiles, including those fired by resistance groups like Hamas in Gaza and Hezbollah in Lebanon. Elias Youssef, deputy director of the Conventional Defense Program at the Stimson Center, told the Wall Street Journal, "The United States has not developed a defense industrial base intended for a large-scale war of attrition in both Europe and West Asia, while meeting its own readiness standards. And both of those wars are extended conflicts, which was not part of U.S. defense planning."
Iranian news. Iranian culture. Iranian voice. This is IRIB English Radio. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Stations closed in a number of U.S. states in a tight race between Democratic Vice President Kamala Harris and Republican former President Donald Trump. Hezbollah continues rocket and drone strikes on Israel's major military bases and settlements in retaliation for the regime's aggression against Lebanon. And thousands of Israeli protesters take to the streets chanting slogans against the Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu after he dismisses the regime's Minister of Military Affairs. Hello, everyone. Thank you for joining us here on World News. And now, first, the vote results in U.S. presidential election are gradually pouring in as polls in several states close and vote counting begins. Polling stations have closed in a number of states, including some swing states. Former President Donald Trump is projected to win in 10 states, including Indiana, Kentucky, and West Virginia. Meanwhile, Vice President Kamala Harris is expected to win in 8, including Vermont and Massachusetts. The electoral votes are now split 101-71 in Trump's favor. Over 80 million people out of 161 million registered voters have cast their ballots so far. Final outcome may not be known for several days if results are as close as polls suggest. Two candidates wrapped up their campaigns Monday night as they focused on swing states to sway undecided voters. Joining us now from New York is correspondent Rachel Hamdoun for your latest. Hello, Rachel. Good to check back in with you. Tell us where we stand.
Right. So just minutes ago, we had three battleground states that have closed their polls, and those are Michigan, Arizona, and Wisconsin. So right now they are starting to count the votes, but those are the votes for those who voted today. We have the absentee and the mail-in votes that have been counted and are beginning to be counted in many of the polls as well. We know that around 6 p.m. to 7 p.m. polls have closed in states such as Indiana, such as Kentucky. Georgia is still being counted. Georgia is one of those battleground states, and Pennsylvania as well. Right now, all eyes are on Pennsylvania because out of the 7 battleground states, it has the most electoral votes at 19. So whoever wins those 19 electoral votes tonight, hopefully if we do know the results for that state tonight, then that's their push into the White House. There's a huge voter turnout so far. especially in the states where there are a lot of college students as well, just like Michigan. Now, we do know Michigan has a very large, the largest actually Arab majority population in the United States. So as soon as the results start to come out so far,